Commissioner Brown?
Here.
Chairman Moltari?
Here.
Please let the record show Commissioner Campbell is absent.
It is traditional that we start our meetings with a flag salute. Would you join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? Pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Okay, our first item of business is public comment period. And I just want to note that if you're here to talk about planning staff updates, number 2B, we'll do that separately. So really what I'd like to do now, is there anybody who'd like to speak on some item that's not on the agenda at all? Come on up. Did you fill out one of these?
Yes, I did, for that specifically. I'm sorry, my name is Sue Morgan Taylor from Lasosas. And I was just going to say that I had something that I wanted to bring up today, but because of this First Street issue, I don't want to muddy the waters. I think I want to pay due respect to what's going on with this. So I have written you guys a letter. If you get a chance to read, I would appreciate it. And I will come back at your next meeting and discuss this issue. It's regarding Los Osos and a process that we seem to be going through month after month, that we have a voice and it's not being heard. And I just would like to bring it up with you, see if there's any suggestions you might have for me.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else want to speak on anything that's not on the agenda? Okay, then I'll close the public comment period, and that brings us to the planning staff updates. Mr. McMaster.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission. Steve McMaster's County Planning Staff. So just to give you a little update on upcoming agendas, the March 14th agenda you just received, it's a fairly extensive one. I'm not going to go through all the items because you have it, and the agenda has been posted, so it is available to the public. There are no items currently scheduled for the March 28th. If nothing today gets continued to that date or from on March 13th, then that meeting would be canceled. For April 11th, we currently have two items. One is a time extension for a minor use permit, a third time extension for a project in Clark Valley Road area. The other one is a cannabis project out in the Carrizo Plains area. So right now, those are the only two items on the April 11th. And from then on, the docket is clear for now. But don't expect it to stay that way.
Okay. Well, thank you. Any comments? All right. That brings us to item 2B, which is a staff update on the Lee minor use permit. Is there a staff report? Yes.
Short report. I'm Carrie Brown, and I'm just giving you an update regarding the Lee Minor Use Permit, the First Street project in Los Osos. The applicant did hold a community meeting on February 13th. It was scheduled to be outside on First Street, but due to the weather, they moved it inside at the Back Bay Inn. Staff has received many objections and criticisms of this meeting, and which included the content of the meeting and adequate notice. So to ensure that the community has adequate notice and that their voices are heard, county staff is scheduling another meeting. I've just reserved the South Bay Community Center for March 21st at 6 p.m. I haven't finalized all the details, but we'll be sending out a notice to everyone interested, all the interested parties. I will also be going to the Los Osos Advisory tonight and announcing it there, too. And that's about it.
Okay. Questions from commissioners? Who from county staff would attend this March 21st meeting?
I will be there.
And anybody else? Anybody from the Parks Department?
I'm going to try to get someone from Parks, but I have not had a chance. And I'd also like to invite Public Works, but they haven't even had a... This is the first they're hearing about it, so.
Okay, because the original staff recommendation was for approval from mm-hmm. both planning and public works. And I wonder if you've rethought that recommendation and or would you think about it after you've heard public comment on the 21st? I think it's important that staff attend that and facilitate that meeting.
Yes, I'll make sure that either myself or someone from my office is there.
Okay. And it might be good to ask
Parks,
since this is public property and that's the kind mm-hmm. of use that could possibly be used there.
Okay. We will do that.
Very good. Any other questions? Okay, we do have several speaker slips on this item, and I just want to remind people that this is an update. We can't take any action on this. It's about the only thing we could do is ask staff to agendize it at some future meeting. But you're welcome to speak to this item today. I would ask that you keep your comments to 3 minutes, please, because we do have a lot of other items on the agenda. So, Sue Morgenthaler, do you want to go first? Bring you back up?
Thank you.
Okay.
Oh, dear. I'm first, and I'm not very good at thinking on my feet. Yeah. Carrie did an excellent job of basically saying that the meeting was poorly advertised and poorly held. The conversation was not geared towards the points that you had discussed at the commissioners' meetings, at your planning commission meeting, mm-hmm. regarding this reduced encroachment project and what all that involved. There was to be no discussion of that. One of our colleagues tried to get out the information at the beginning as to what you had stated, but they didn't want that. This wasn't for discussion here. It was about a different agenda. So rather than drill that into the ground, I'm glad we're going to have an attempt to have another meeting, and I hope that it is fair and everyone gets a chance to discuss issues that weren't able to come up, because after 5 months, this meeting that was held the other night was 35 minutes. So from my point of view, the takeaway from the gathering that the community wants to protect the use and the ownership of the public land of First Street. Thank you.
Okay. Question?
I'd like to make a recommendation for people in this group. It might be worthwhile to go over the audio and video of the meeting.
We have a transcript of it.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Would you like to see it, or probably not?
No, I just think it would help for the next meeting.
Yeah, we have recorded it. Two people recorded it, and
right.
Two people have gone over and transcribed it.
Yeah,
so
good idea.
We do have word for word what happened. Thank you for that suggestion.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir. Paul Hirschfield. Paul.
Good morning. Paul Hirschfield from Los Osos. I don't have to fill you in on what you said at that meeting, the hearing on the 27th of September. I will remind the applicant, which I don't even know if they're here, that at the close of the hearing, their representative stated, and I quote, "I think it's reasonable with all the comments presented by the commissioners, if you would allow us to continue this, to make some adjustments that might get to a point that you could support it. I think that we could work hard and fast to make that happen. Here we are 5 months later, and the applicant has done absolutely nothing except to hastily convene a short community meeting on February 13th that was actually run by the applicant's attorney. You, on the other hand, called for a robust public process and directed planning staff to work with the applicant and community to prepare a new plan incorporating your comments and guidelines. I assumed, based on that, that the process would be coordinated and facilitated by staff. Subsequent queries about that to Ms. Brown made it clear to me that control of the process had been conceded completely to the applicant. A few small signs and a post on Nextdoor were the only notifications of the impending meeting until on February 6th when myself and others received an email invitation to a First Street public meeting on February 13th. The meeting agenda included access to the bay, this is their agenda, pedestrian accessibility along First Street to the bay, Baywood Pier, and Second Street, vehicular accessibility, parking configuration, potential surfacing of First Street, and landscape planting. You'll note that the agenda made no mention of the fact that it was an illegal encroachment we were discussing, nor of the September hearing. My attempt to present this important background to the community was met with hostility and obstruction. Community members who did speak were in opposition to the encroachment and in support of the right to unimpeded coastal access. At the meeting, I proposed a 5-foot encroachment consisting of a 3-foot walkway and 2 feet of planting with relocation of the boardwalk extension to the property line. 3 people spoke in favor of restoring access for the launching of small watercraft. 2 physical plans were actually submitted. The applicant has had more than ample time to act in good faith and respect both the wishes of the community and the direction of this commission. I would like to state that prior to any further consideration by this commission, that they should be instructed to immediately remove all encroachments. Thank you. And I have a copy of the plan that I'll...
Thank you. I'm not sure. Yael Corin? I'm not sure if I said your name right, but...
Yes, Yael. Thank you.
Hi, Yael Corin, Resources. I will not take up much of your time. I concur with everything that Paul Hirschfield said, and I just want to reiterate that there was no attempt to reach us within those 5 months since the previous meeting here on September 27th, in spite of several attempts by us to contact planning staff. I would like to say that we do have the tapes, and I can send you the link to the tapes if you want to, and we will also send you the transcript of the meeting. And just to reiterate that from the 40 or so people that were there, most of them did not know why they're there even. They were just heard that there is something there. There was no clear agenda other than the agenda of the Back Bay Inn. Nothing mentioned. I even talked, called them on the phone to find out what the meeting was on, and they said, well, some people don't like our planting. We think it's beautiful, but some people don't like it, and we would like to talk to them. So they talked to us, and those of us that spoke were really, it's not about disliking plants, it's about disliking taking over of a public access. So I think they heard us. If they wanted to hear us, they heard us loud and clear. And we definitely look forward to the next meeting that the county staff is planning so that they will express to us that they heard us. Because if they're coming back into that meeting not knowing, just like they did not know about your requirements, not hearing us, then it's something is really wrong here in this process. Thank you.
Thank you. David Ballas. David.
My name is Dave Bolas. I'm a resident of Los Osos Baywood Park. At the Back Bay Inn's February 13th First Street meeting, where no revised permit was presented or even spoken of, the Back Bay Inn Slow Land Investors LLC representatives who represented and led the meeting said the Back Bay Inn was gathering input on what the community would like to have done with First Street and said they would come back with several alternatives at future meetings. Speaking of alternatives, I remember that the Planning Commission gave the Back Bay Inn 2 alternatives last September. The 2 alternatives were, 1, the Back Bay Inn would work with the planning department and the community during a continuance to revise the permit to greatly reduce the size of their encroachment, or, alternative 2, the majority of planning commissioners would vote to reject the permit. The Back Bay Inn said it would comply with alternative 1, but apparently nothing was done to revise their permit in 4.5 months. Meanwhile, the Back Bay Inn has continued business as usual. They've widened a walkway built on the First Street right-of-way so as to give better access for motel guests when they use the boardwalk extension to move from the rooms to the motel's bayfront lawn. And they have propped up some plants planted 21 months ago that are about 20 feet into the right-of-way. And they've placed signs on the right-of-way announcing restrictions on public access. Attached to this statement, which I'm submitting for the public record, are photographs documenting the prohibited actions I've described. Because the Back Bay Inn has been unwilling to uphold their end of the bargain offered to them by the Planning Commission last September, I believe it's time for rejection of the Back Bay Inn permit and time for the street to be cleared of all encroachments. If the Back Bay Inn wishes to use part of First Street for commercial purposes, it's time to begin afresh. quote, think of it as a clean slate, unquote, the Back Bay Inn representatives told attendees at the meeting a few weeks ago. I agree. Start by rejecting the permit and ordering the removal of the encroachments in the street. Otherwise, how much more time and energy by planning staff, the commissioners, and the public will be wasted? I request that the Planning Commission reject the permit as soon as possible and require the Back Bay Inn to remove its encroachments. Since a new process and a new permit is now their objective, as was stated at the recent meeting, the project should start with a clean slate on the public street. Thank you.
Thank you. Beverly Boyd. Good morning.
Hi. My name is Beverly Boyd. I'm a resident of Los Osos, and I'm concerned about the Back Bay's continuing encroachment on First Street. Thank you for revisiting this issue. I know it has meant more time, more reading, more work from you. But I'd appreciate it. I attended the Back Bay Inn's February 13th meeting, at which two of the owner's representatives solicited views about what the, quote, community wanted. I heard no attendees speak in favor of the unpermitted encroachments. Rather, the meeting seemed to be a fishing expedition with the BBI seeking something that would justify its keeping the encroachments in place on the coastal access street. Since the September 27, 2018 meeting of the Planning Commission, none of the Back Bay's encroachments on First Street has been removed. In fact, trees and plants extend farther into the street because of growth enhanced by recent rains. Consequently, the east side offers even less space for parking than it did last September. In addition, the unpermitted boardwalk extension still blocks the gentle slope at which the launching of small watercraft was accessible until the extension's construction in summer of 2017. The BBI has not acted in good faith by its having taken no action on the conditions you cited on September 27, and to which the owner's representative agreed. The owner has shown disrespect to you, to the public, and to the Coastal Commission. After the Back Bay Inn built out to and beyond the edge of motel property, the owner's encroachments have provided the motel with a buffer on public property to create more amenities and easy access for its guests. Do I think the owner deserves another chance to do a workaround so that he can give to the public some of the public property that he's appropriated? You can infer that my answer to that question is no. Thank you for focusing on this issue and for listening to me once again. And I have copies of my statement to give to Ms. Hedges.
Thank you very much. Larry Border? Bordes? I'm not sure.
My handwriting is
on the Well, thank you.
Hi, my name's Larry Bender, resident of Los Osos. I just came across a new document regarding First Street. It's from a parks planner back in 2003 telling a resident on Pasadena Drive that if anyone plants or removes any of the natural habitat or does anything to First Street, they'll be arrested and there's a fine. So this is a public document here. You know, people are trying to preserve First Street, and there's, I'm going to keep bringing information trying to show you that. I'll hand this in to you.
That's great. Thank you. All right. That's the last speaker slip I have on that. Is there anybody from the Back Bay Inn or the applicant representative here today? Okay. All right. Any comments or thoughts from the committee?
I was wondering what the promotion for the next meeting is going to be, Carrie, as far as making sure that it's not just the part of the community we've been hearing from, but the entire community actually gets notification.
Yeah. So we're going to contact LOCAC and ask them to share it with their readers or their, they have a list of interested parties. I also know a journalist that I'm going to request that he write an article about it. Mm-hmm. I can't guarantee that will happen, but mm-hmm. I can request it.
Okay. All right, I was just curious
because
I mean, and then the other thing, of course, as far as outreach would be, what do they suggest as well? If there's other suggestions, you know, as far as how to get to the people who, to get to the community, make sure that everybody knows, so we don't have this same kind of response that nobody knows. When maybe people know, they just didn't come, but you know, we just want to make sure we get it out there. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, so at this point, we're not going to take any action on this, but I think we'll wait and hear from staff on the 21st of next month. That's just 3 weeks from now. I do hope that we come back with some staff recommendations about how to proceed based on that, even if it's whatever may come out of that meeting. Mr. McMasters, do you have anything else you'd like to add to that?
Not really. I think, yeah, we'll have to take we'll have to see what comes out of the meeting, determine obviously if it's an item that we have to agendize in the Planning Commission's mm-hmm. agenda. There's more lead time versus just an informational update. So if there's actually a recommended action, that would have to be scheduled probably for a month or two out after that.
Let's try to make it as expeditious as possible because this is dragged on unreasonably long. We had the impression that this would be something that would be worked on right away, and it went on for months with really no action. So I think
we could come back with a plan of action, let's say, after the meeting. If there's a commitment to do a revised plan in a certain time frame, we can present that information, saying here's the time frame and here's the steps that came out of the meeting. Ultimately, it will come back before your Planning Commission.
That was my question. And given that is ultimately what's going to happen, would you like to suggest some dates at this point? We know that it's going to come back.
Well, the problem is if we suggest dates, it denotes actually preparing something to bring back. And without knowing the results of the meeting, I don't know that I don't know that I'm going to commit to writing a staff report that we don't know what's in it. So,
right.
So I think, you know, realistically knowing when the meeting is being held and knowing our lead times in order to prepare staff reports and get them on the agenda, like I said, I think it would be probably a month and a half to 2 months after that is when it would show up, mm-hmm. just given our lead times, in order to get it on the agenda.
Sounds good.
So again,
I mean, yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
No. I was just going to say, please make it as expeditious as possible.
We will.
Anything else? Okay. Thank you for coming today. And we'll hopefully see you not too distant in the future again. Okay. That brings us to our consent agenda. There is, I think, Holly has one correction on one of the items.
Yes. Thank you, Commissioner Matari, members of the Planning Commission, Holly Phipps, Planning staff. Consent item number 6, general plan conformity report for Napomo General Basketball Courts determination. The conformity report, the meeting date advertised in the staff report is February 14th, 2019. I'd like to just change that to the 28th, please.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any other comments or any items that any of the commissioners would like to pull from the consent agenda? Okay. Seeing none, then
I have a comment. I don't want to pull an item, but I have a comment.
Sure, of course.
The basketball courts in the Napomo Park are going to go in the area where the equestrians have been parking their trailers when they come to ride there. It's going to make it where there's no place to park them, which may be okay. I don't think it is, but it might be. But before, when we would pull into the Napomo Park, we'd go up toward the ranger station, go to the right, and park underneath the pine trees. They died. All the pine trees were removed. And so then we would park there. And now they put a fence there where we can't get in there. And now if you put the basketball courts there, there's not going to be any place to park the horse trailers. So we need to consider that when you put the basketball courts in, to go ahead and make the place that's in the general plan for the horse trailers.
I think we'll have Sean Cooper respond from Parks. Respond to that.
Good morning, Commissioners. Sean Cooper with County Parks. The Napomo Community Park Master Plan depicts all the
future amenities in the Napomo Park. The proposed basketball courts are going where we initially had new tennis courts going, mm-hmm. So the footprint is similar to where the tennis courts would have been. We also show areas to accommodate the equestrian facilities, and I'll look back at the master plan so we can, I don't remember off the top of my head exactly how that's configured in relation to where these courts are going, but I can send those to you, point that out to you, but we do have accommodated for the future use for equestrians there.
Well, what it indicates is that the equestrians will be parking over toward the west by where the big tree is. You would put a parking space over there, but that's a little ways away from there, and now I wouldn't pull my horse trailer and truck in there the way it is. So all I'm saying is when you do the courts, if you just make a place behind them where we can park,
mm-hmm. Okay.
Because the other day we had 8 trailers in there, mm-hmm. And we use it all the time, but we ride from our house to the park, okay? So if you just think about that when you put the courts in, that's all.
Okay. All right, will do. Thanks.
I noticed when I was reading about the Nestor project, and I support the Nestor project, but it says that that's recreation zoned, but you've approved 19, this Planning Commission approved 19 homes in there. Anyone got any comments about that?
Katie Knoll, county staff. There will be 16 lots.
Okay, 16 lots.
16, yes, correct.
But it was zoned recreation, so.
That is correct. To the east, there are also, it is also zoned recreation.
Black Lake, you're right. Never mind.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, I guess it begs the question is, will residential developments be consistent with the general plan and zoning? And Terry is shaking his head yes. So.
And that was my question.
Terry Waller, planning staff.
Mention that, yeah.
I'd just like to point out that the recreation land use category does allow residential development.
Okay. Thank
you. That was a question that somebody asked me.
Yeah.
Now I know.
Now we have the answer. Okay. So now are we ready for a motion to approve the consent calendar?
I so move.
Okay. I'll second.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Do we need a roll call or can we just say aye?
No, roll call.
Roll call. Commissioner Brown?
Aye.
Commissioner Harrison?
Yes.
Commissioner Ortiz-Legg?
Yes.
And Chairman Moultari?
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much. Now that brings us to the hearings portion of our meeting. And our first one is the Brown variance and minor use permit and coastal development permit. Could you introduce that, please?
Hearing item number 8 is a continued hearing to consider a request by Kara and Jimmy Brown for a variance minor use permit, coastal development permit. County file number DRC 2017-00058. Supervisorial District Number 2, Project Manager Young Choi.
Very good. Staff?
Good morning, Commissioner. My name is Young Choi, planning staff. Here today with me, we have Ms. Katie Knoll, who presented the first item in December 13th. And here I am with Mr. Terry Waller, senior planner. And today in the seat, we also have our county geologist, Brian Paparello.
Very good.
This project is a variance to allow grading on slopes in excess of 30%, a minor use permit and coastal development permit to allow grading on slopes between 20 and 30%. And to allow single-family residents approximately 3,400 square foot residence with 850 square foot attached garage. As I briefly mentioned, this item was continued from December 13, 2018 Planning Commission meeting to allow for additional information. And those information are additional graphics as well as our geologists to attend to answer any geology questions. The site is on the corner, near the corner of Cerro Gordo and Shear, and it is an upsloping lot. Excavation into the hillside for the garage and foundation is necessary in order to develop. This project will require extensive retaining walls and engineering foundation system. And many of the lots in this neighborhood are located on a slope in excess of 30%, and it actually requires a variance to build on these residences. To touch a little bit more on the variance, the applicant is requesting a variance for this proposed single-family dwelling. There are no special circumstances. The steep slope offers no alternative use on site. The entire lot is on over 30%, and this is not a use variance. Staff believes that there is no adverse impact on health, safety, and welfare, and we have our documents. And this is consistent with our general plan and local coastal plan. The site is located in Cayucas on the corner of Shear and Cerro Gordo. It's located in residential single-family land use category. And this is the aerial view of the site. As you can see, it is vacant. And this is the site plan that shows the footprint of the building. This is the floor plan for the first floor slash the garage. This is the second level floor plan with two bedrooms. Third level with living room and kitchen. And the fourth level being the master suite. This is the elevation. Another elevation from the other side. This is the front elevation. And this is the illustrative graphic that our architect has provided. This is another graphic that he has provided to you. So there are some concerns in this project. One of the concerns is geologic stability in this area, drainage and erosion control, local coastal plan policies, and coastal zone land use ordinance and Estero plan, and they are all outlined in our staff report for you. So one of the concerns was the geologic stability. The applicant has provided engineering geology investigation and soils report, and it has been peer-reviewed by our county geologist. And their county geologist reviewed, and the findings are consistent with the conclusion and the recommendation of the provided report. And those report also has been attached to your packet this. So along with that, all the recommendations outlined in the geology reports are included in the conditions of approval, and it requires inspection during construction. And this inspection also comes from our inspector at the county, as well as geologists, to confirm that such foundation is at the right recommended level. Our advisory council, Cayucas Advisory Council, reviewed and recommended approval on this project in December 6th of 2017 of their meeting. They commented that they would support this project if careful evaluation of drainage was to happen. And to answer that, the drainage and erosion control plan will be reviewed by our Public Works Department prior to issuance of the construction permit. Now, after the first meeting with the advisory council, our Cayucas advisory council developed the steep hillside lot interpretations. And those outlines that fourth levels are generally not accepted. Every floor should be stepped back at least 6 feet. No projecting deck from the first level, and projecting decks from second and third levels limited to 3 feet of overhanging. Now, staff acknowledged the interpretation of the hillside development and brought back this item back to our Cayucas Land Use Committee for another round of review with this interpretation on August 2018. Our Land Use Committee stated that it's not fair to retroactively apply the new interpretations, as this project was already reviewed prior to the interpretation. However, the architect knew about the interpretation and accommodated as much as possible by reducing the decks on the second, third, and fourth levels to minimize the overhangs of each decks. It is staff's recommendation to approve variance, minor use permit, coastal development permit, DRC 2017-00058, based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B. Staff is here to answer any questions, along with our different staff planners, and our county geologist is also here to answer your questions as well.
Very good. Any questions, commissioners?
Yes. Yes. I just want to understand what the architect did with the comments from the advisory council. They did set back to 6 feet each level. Was that a change from the
first set of plans?
Yes, the first set of plan did have a lot more overhanging decks on the second and third floor. And what our architect did was to shorten them by about 4 feet, I believe. But the mm-hmm. architect would be able to answer the exact square feet, how much they okay. reduced. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. I have a couple of questions. One is that in our packets, there was a exhibit that was illustrating how this project would be on the site relative to other houses next door. And I just want to be clear, is that will it conforms with the 28-foot height limit? Will the building be, as seen from street level, it seems like it wouldn't be taller than the adjacent building. Is that your interpretation of the exhibits as well?
Our interpretation was that this was provided from the architect. However, looking at the construction documents, it is consistent with our local coastal plan and estero plan that this structure is no more than 28 feet from the average.
That's not the question that I asked, though. The question is, if you were at street level and looking at this, would the top of this building be higher or the same than the building next door?
Architect has not provided a street view that determines the height between the proposed building
and
the
building. There was something that was pretty close to that, I thought, in our packets. Anyway, we'll look at that, and then we can come back.
Right. The applicant has only provided kind of like a side view of the house that doesn't explicitly show the height difference from the front view.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? I wonder if the staff geologist, though, could just give us some firsthand comments that he has analyzed this and is comfortable, because this was probably the major concern of people in the neighborhood. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commission members. My name is Brian Paparello. I'm the reviewing geologist for the County of San Luis Obispo. I received a submittal package from planning staff on December 12, 2017 for this project. In that packet were the project plans and also the engineering geology investigation prepared by GeoSolutions dated September 29, 2017. I made a personal site reconnaissance to the property to review the report on site on December 29, 2017. For the purposes of putting the geology underfoot, observing site conditions, and reviewing the report for conformance with the San Luis Obispo County guidelines for engineering geology reports. I subsequently issued a favorable review letter for the project, finding that I concurred with the conclusions and recommendations for site development of the project engineering geology investigation, and that letter was issued on January 5th, 2018. During my review on-site, I observed that in outcrop, there is Franciscan Formation bedrock that's exposed right there on the cut slope at the corner of Cerro Gordo and Shearer Avenue. Typically, the site, based with the findings in the engineering geology report, are 2 to 4 feet of colluvial topsoil, basically a slope wash type topsoil, in turn underlain by Mesozoic Franciscan Formation bedrock encountered at depths between 4 and 6 feet below the ground surface. There was no evidence of landslide debris in any of the two exploratory trenches excavated on the site, and also no geomorphic expression of landsliding on or adjacent to the property through aerial photo interpretation from aerial photos taken in 1953, 2002, and current Google Earth images. No landslides have been mapped by previous published authors for the site in the vicinity to include Holland Prior 1975, Holland Prior 1979, Weber 79, and the most current published mapping by the California Geological Survey. I believe it's 2012, but it might be a little more recent than that.
Okay. Well, thank you. Any questions for? Thank you very much. Appreciate your coming today. Being here. Okay, I'm going to open the public hearing. We'll start with the applicant. If you could keep your comments to less than 10 minutes, that would be great.
Good morning, Commissioners.
John McDonald, the architect. First, to answer your question, that house, we had a surveyor survey the roof of the house next door, and we're within a foot of the same height. Okay. We've also, I stepped the house back every level, and that top floor is like 20 feet back from the other one, and the other ridge does, it sticks out a lot more. So I, when I was designing this house, I naively kind of thought it, everybody would be happy because I stepped everything back so much, and I don't think, but we did reduce any of the decks overhang to conform with the new rules, and it does have the fourth level, but they're saying, I felt they kind of moved the goalposts after we got approved, and then they came back and we had, they recommended generally no fourth levels, but I think with the way it's stepped back, and we only have a 44% footprint on the lot when you're allowed a 50% footprint, so I think that really helps shrink. And if you look at the floor plans, the floors really aren't that big. There's four of them, but if you have any other questions, I keep it short.
Let's see. Do we have any questions?
I think that there were some statements about during construction on how to protect or to ensure that neighbors are not impacted by anything or something like that. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, with any construction, I don't know how to avoid concrete trucks and dirt.
Well, that I understand, yeah. But as far as the cut and all that shoring up, I guess, or something.
Well, we're kind of fortunate on this lot is behind and to the left are vacant lots, but there's also a sewer easement of 10 feet between us and the house next door,
Okay. That
greenhouse. And so our depths of our cuts aren't going to be deep enough to impact.
Okay, great.
And plus the geologist is going to be there while we dig. And if they see any issues, I've had other projects where they've come in and say, okay, we can, put some fencing around to hold the soil or shore something up. So, and actually our geologist is here today. He asked last time if he might come, and maybe he can speak next after me. And if you have any more questions, I'd be more than happy to
thank you.
Come back.
Anybody else? Okay, we appreciate that. Did the geologist representing the applicant like to say anything? And could I ask both of you, before you leave, could you fill out a form, please, just so that we have your names and for the record? Thank you.
Morning, Commissioners. John Kammer, engineering geologist with GeoSolutions. I did the subsurface investigation at the site. Actually, I've done numerous on Cerro Gordo, about five homes there, Hacienda, Cheer. I know the area very well. The rock is good, competent material, and we're pretty satisfied with the stability of the rock itself. If conditions arise during excavation, we have ways of treating a slope that is not stable. But the type of rock there, gray wacky sandstone, is very stable in the area. And I don't see any landslides or any indication of landslides in the area.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you for coming today. Okay. I do have some speaker slips for the public, and we received voluminous correspondence. So it's in our packets and delivered today, and I trust everyone's taken a look at those. But John Cartzell, do you want to go first?
Thank you, Chairman Watari, members of the Commission. My name is John Carcel. I'm a resident of Cayucas. I'm the president of the Cayucas Citizens Advisory Council. I'm here today speaking as an individual, not for the council. And I stand here a little bit astonished because in December, I brought to your Commission's attention the fact that we hired a geologist and we submitted a report to your Commission that said that entire hill is a landslide. And there was problems going upslope. In fact, I read an email that Young Choi sent to Mr. Cameron that says, please see the highlighted portion of the email below, which was my email, The email is asking if the proposed construction will aggravate any upslope geological issues. I'm working with county geologists to provide response to this, but could you work with your geologist to also provide a response for this question as well? Nobody provided a response. They didn't even mention the upslope. Again, now, you have in your packet from a certified geologist that says this entire hill is a landslide. This is the map shows where this is a toe of that landslide. Our concern in the neighborhood is if you excavate on that toe at this point, now that we're getting a lot of water, are you going to have major problems? Is it going to create a major landslide coming down? Are we going to have mud flow debris coming down? This is a steep hill. There's nothing above it. It's just hill going up for another 650 feet or so. There are major concerns here, and they've just totally been ignored. I don't understand that. I really don't. You know, if I just listened to the presentation you folks just received, I'd be wondering, why are any neighbors at all concerned? It sounds like a perfectly fine little place. It's not. There are problems here, and they're just not being addressed, and that's of major concern. I brought up last time the issue of fire, that in light of Paradise and in light of CSA 10A, which services that area, we had one tank, and for 12 years or so, we've been trying to get another tank. That's due to be installed the end of this year, but it's not in there yet, and it may not be installed. Who knows? And my concern is we don't have enough water to be putting out fires. If we have a vegetation fire coming down next spring, like Paradise had, in light of the new weather issues, who knows? We feel vulnerable there. And it's just not being addressed. The fire, you don't have authorization from the fire department, contrary to your staff report. The fire chief of the Cayucas Fire Department, which no longer exists, said, no comment. I don't think no comment means no concern. That was during the transition. We now have the Estero Bay Fire Department. Ask them. I know Cal Fire doesn't really approve like the fact of going down dead-end streets with no turnaround at all. That's what you have there. Maybe they could block shear, or maybe they couldn't. But there are concerns here that just aren't being addressed, and I mentioned these last time. And I'm surprised staff didn't come back with something. I want something in writing from a geologist who puts his license on the line that says, we who live there don't have to worry. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Susan Dunn. Good morning.
Hello, my name is Susan Dunn. I moved to Cayucas from North County, and it's a completely different culture, including what and where we build. In 1974, USGS surveys show the previous landslides on the project parcel. In 1982, heavy rains caused a landslide off Hang Glider Hill onto Hacienda Drive. It stranded over a dozen homes with mud over 3 feet deep, and it took the county approximately 50 truckloads to open Hacienda Drive back up, which is directly below Cerro Gordo. The Earth Designs report that John mentioned said it geographically likened Osos, Washington, and La Conchita to our hill. It shows old landslides covering the entire hill, and it recommends substantial drainage control, or we risk catastrophic failure of the hill, as in Oso, Washington, as in La Conchita. 2015, the planning and building letter to the Board of Supervisors concurs that there's high to very high slide potential. In 2016 and 17, the 2080 Cerro Gordo was approved. It created a rock and a landslide after digging a crater in the side of the hill. In the 1930s, Highway 1 was built. It's a state scenic highway, and it frequently has landslides. The subject parcel is in full view of Highway 1. In 1999, the state designated a state historical scenic byway. In 2002, the feds upgraded Slow to Big Sur designation to an all-American road, one of 120 nationally, one of two in California. The intrinsic quality requirements of a federal all-American road include scenic and natural. The corridor management plan requires conservation enhancement of the highway's intrinsic qualities and strategy for maintaining and enhancing them. That being said, the Estero Area Plan supports that in, quote, standards intended to protect and enhance the planning area's abundant natural resources and scenic beauty.
In Chapter 7, it puts a height limitation that says new development shall not exceed 28 feet unless a more restrictive height limitation is specified in the following standards. In other words, digging out a story or two underneath that 28 foot isn't supposed to be happening. In conclusion, Earth Designs has likened us to La Conchita, California, and Oso, Washington, which slid 5 years ago next month. I'm from Washington. Oso's is geologically and worse politically similar to San Luis Obispo. Shortly after the slide, a Seattle Times journalist published over 70 years of official documents warning of slide risk, USGS surveys, NASA images, and recalled a major adjacent slide in 2006, yet the same day as Snohomish County official claimed the slide was completely unforeseen. SNOCO had to condemn and pay market value on 34 parcels and offer market value on over 100 neighboring parcels. 43 people died, resulting in over $70 million in settlements. Worst, they didn't die. They were trapped screaming for 3 days. And the rescuers and the families listened and were helpless. 43 people died, cold, bleeding out, suffocating in the dark, and smelling their own feces. If there's even a fraction of a chance that hill's going to slide on us, I strongly oppose this project and the project next to us is proposed to dig out that entire area, not just the one parcel. Thank you. Thank you very much. Everybody on Hacienda I talk to has the same feeling I do. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Connie? Oh, I'm sorry. Connie?
Calm down. My name is Connie Payne, and I live at Stewart Avenue in Cayucas. Today, there's a request for a variance to build a house on Cerro Gordo, exceeding the 30% slope. Variance means being different, divergent, and inconsistent. Yes, this proposed house will be different and inconsistent with the Estero plan. Under the geologic study areas in Chapter 8, Section 4, which specifically limits the sloping site to less than 30%, this builder is asking for an exception to the rule. Also, the environmental coordinator has determined that it can be seen with certainty that there is no possibility the proposed project may have a significant adverse effect on the environment, therefore should be exempt from a CEQA review. There's already one house being built on this street, which has caused significant adverse effects to the neighborhood and its surrounding environment. Without proper preparation and oversight, the building area suffered a slide with mud and rock debris. You'll see pictures of that. A house of this size will alter the view shed significantly. It will be visible from the designated scenic Highway 1, which is also referred to sometimes as the AHA spot in Cayucas. The project should be designed to minimize the visual impacts as seen from Highway 1, as stated in GSA Section 7 of the Estero Plan, and also written into the plan, is that one of the goals is to maintain the small town character of Cayucas and as a beach community, and to preserve the natural environment, protect the seashore, estuaries, and coastal area with minimal impairment of physical and visual accessibility. I honestly believe that this construction can alter the character of Cayucas, as well as affect the safety and well-being of the surrounding neighbors. This proposed house and the ones to follow must be required to adhere to the Estero Plan, written with the purpose to protect and preserve this beautiful coastal town for generations. And here are some pictures I can.
We appreciate that. Thank you. Carol Baptiste. Carol, good morning.
Good morning, Chairman and Commissioners. Thank you. I'm Carol Baptiste. I'm on the Cayucas Citizens Advisory Council, but I'm speaking today as an individual. The hillside where this project proposal is was the subject of an extensive geological study that was done by Earth Design. Doreen Liberto Blanc, Lou Blanc geologist, Don Funk hydrologist, May 10th, 2014. An extensive study. I believe that's on record. I was fortunate enough to be able to ride along on a field trip with the geologist and the hydrologist. As we drove up the hill behind Cerro Gordo and on up to Hang Glider Hill, the geologist and hydrologist were pointing out land formations that indicate the presence of a previous slide. They were filming and taking photos. There were land formations called hummocking, which are ripples in the hill, similar to moguls on a ski slope. And they noticed the way that the serpentine was spread around, and they were certain that this was a geological a former slide. They had historical maps and map markings of the hill and aerial photos showing the half moon formation of the slide. The toe of the slide is where the highest row of homes are on the upslope of Shear Avenue. Those homes are built on fill from the toe of the slide. And up to about two-thirds the way up the hill is also fill from the former slide. When there's a slide of that size, rocks, whatever, are tumbled, and specific soil samples can hit rocks that were rolled down the hill, and it's not indicative of the actual property. One more thing. When I was with Lou Blanc and Don Funk on the hillside, they told me to get landslide insurance, and they told me to get flood insurance. I got flood insurance, but my application for landslide insurance was denied. And the denial letter said I was denied because I live in a geologically unstable area. I can't believe that the county geologist and the planning department are ignoring the Earth Design study. It was extensive, and it was submitted. Thank you.
Thank you. Can I have one more speaker slip? Jeff Edwards. Jeff.
Thank you, Chairperson Moultari, and good morning, Commissioners. My name is Jeff Edwards. While I am not the applicant's representative in this matter, I would urge you to approve it today. I have over 35 years of experience as a land use practitioner in the coastal zone of San Luis Obispo County. And I'm concerned about an alarming trend that I'm seeing from advisory councils. And I'll go into that in a little more detail in a minute. But as you know, the standard of review for an application like this is our general plan and our certified local coastal program and land use plan. And as you've also heard from your staff, this project conforms with the general plan and the LCP. So that is the basis for your approval. And as to my concern, I'm seeing an alarming trend from advisory councils, particularly on the coast, particularly in District 2, where I have experience. And the concern is that advisory councils that don't like projects are finding ways to oppose them that we haven't seen before. And I'll give you a couple examples. In this instant case, you've heard about the advisory council's interpretations. Well, this is an attempt to craft new legislation, in effect. What's going to happen to the next applicant that comes in after the December 17th interpretation from the Cayucas Advisory Council? They're going to attempt to apply that. And what they're after is really reducing heights. They don't want any four-story homes. They don't want this home. And they're using drainage and geologic stability and other red herrings as a way to get to it. So what I do object to, again, at most, not only at the Cayucas Advisory Council, but in Los Osos and Cambria and maybe in other districts, is that advisory councils, they don't want to go through the very laborious process of crafting legislation. As your commission knows, especially in the coastal zone, it takes years, if not decades, to craft new legislation. And it's hard enough to meet general plan and find general plan consistency with individual projects. I would respectfully submit to your commission, we don't need additional rules, regulations, guidelines that have not gone through the proper process and are being used, again, to oppose projects and attempt to administer these new ideas. And I just think that's wrong. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you. I don't have any other speaker slips. Is there anybody else who'd like to comment on this item? Okay, seeing none, then I'll close the hearing. Commissioners, comments, questions?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Commissioner Brown.
I am looking at a will serve, with respect to the water, there's a will serve letter on this project. Written by Richard Rose, engineering technician for San Luis County. So the question was water. There is a will serve letter that we should probably note on that. But it also goes on to say, and the project is subject to an approved fire safety plan in compliance with uniform fire code requirements of the local protection agency. So I'm speaking to the fire objection that was brought up by somebody, that there is no fire department or no, you know, the implication was that there was no standards. Can you speak to that?
Sure. At the first time when the application was in, the fire jurisdiction was with Cayucas Fire Department. However, in December of 2018, that jurisdiction has turned over to CAL FIRE. And if you look at our condition number 15, it speaks to our fire safety. It states that all plan must be approved by either Cayucas Fire or County Fire / CAL FIRE, depending on which department has jurisdiction over Cayucas at the time of building permit review and issuance. And this is required at the time of building permit, not even at the issuance. So applicant will have to get a fire safety letter from CAL FIRE at the time when they're applying for construction permit.
And I'm looking at the graphic that shows, maybe you can put it up on the screen, but it shows kind of a panorama of what this house would look like in next to the other houses that are already built. Yeah. First thing, I see that this proposed house is literally the same in terms of the height of the houses that exist. I see that, although I can't tell here, but I assume the slopes are similar. In the staff report, you did say that there were other houses built on similar slopes. So the question has been, or is to me, I guess, these other houses that are virtually in the same location, have they experienced any landsliding or earth movement that you know of?
Terry Waller, planning staff. In this immediate area, not to my knowledge, there's been some minor slumping on the project at the very end of Cerro Gordo, the last project in. Due to financial concerns, the landowner wasn't able to complete it on schedule, and so it sat through a winter, a wet winter, a couple years ago, and there was some sumping at the top of the, the soil material, but the rest of the slope was...
It's very frustrating because we've got two geologists that say that there would not be problems in the construction, and then we have somebody's interpretation or third-party information from a hydrologist or geologist that isn't here that, I mean, I don't know what to do with that. I can only...
Disregard it.
I can only evaluate who's here. And
one thing to bear in mind is that the study that the opponents were referring to is a very generalized study. It covers a much larger area. This is a very specific, site-specific geologic review that was done for this site specifically. So they actually did borings and evaluated the gray wacky sandstone, which is the will provide the stable foundation for the retaining wall and the foundation system.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Harris? How many of the houses that exist in this neighborhood on this street were built on slopes of 30 degrees or greater, and did they have to get exemptions?
Virtually all of the ones that you see in this view that's still up there would have required variances. Some of these are probably older, possibly pre-local coastal plan, and I'm not sure that those would have required a variance, you know, back in the 70s or early 80s.
So the other houses that are neighbors to this house are also visible from Highway 1.
Oh, that's true. You can see that this is a continuation of the dense urban environment, that it is limited by the urban services line. This is the upper reach of the urban services line in Cayucas on this hillside.
And I was going to ask you if you'd look at the 2014 geological survey by Earth Designs, but I think you answered that question when you said that that was was not a specific site survey.
Well, I'd like to leave, the adequacy or an evaluation of that geologic study to the professional geologists that we have with us today. But I just wanted to point out that there was a different level of study. One was very specific to this site, and one was more general for the hillside.
And that's what I wanted you to say.
Okay. I have a few comments.
Go ahead.
No.
All right, Chairman. Please. Well, I think that pretty much my colleagues have addressed some of the things that I was, interested in regards to the current housing that's there and the variances that were granted prior, as well as the fact that we in California coast, including myself, live in foothill areas where there are risks. And I think that this is something that we have chosen. And so when I look at this hillside, though, and concerning Mr. Carcel's concerns on fire, of course, something that I'm very concerned about as well, I don't see the fuel load in this location that would replicate anything like a paradise or something of that nature. However, I'm glad to see that we have the fire portion addressed. I think that the other pieces are, just that this fact that the changes that were made within the advisory council as recommendations were picked up by the homeowner, I think says something about their willingness to work with the neighborhood. And that's all I have to comment on.
Another comment. Okay. And one other comment about the fire site of it. I actually drove by that site one day just to look at it, and there's a fire hydrant across the street. There didn't seem to be a major fuel load on the hill, unless it's changed in the last 2 weeks. So I think the fire department's going to look at it and write a recommendation that's going to not be a negative. And I got 37 years in the fire service, if you didn't know that.
Okay, thank you. Yes.
If I may, I'd like to add a little bit more conditions on regarding fire and the height. For the fire, as I mentioned, they will require to have a fire safety plan at the time of construction. And prior to occupancy, they are also required to get a final inspection from the fire department. In terms of the height, at the building permit, staff will require a benchmark survey prior to issuance of construction. And at the roof nailing, we'll check the height. And also during the framing, we'll also check the height in three different phases so that this house will conform to the 28-foot limit.
Okay. Thank you. I have a question for the county geologist. And I apologize. Could you say your name again for me?
Brian Paparella.
Okay, Brian, thank you very much. My question is, if this building, well, first of all, the foundations are going into bedrock, not onto the soils above, is that correct?
I assume that would be the case. More than likely, the designers of the structure, you know, I don't review foundation design, I just look at geologic stability.
But the recommendations of the geology report.
The recommendations of the soil engineering report, typical construction there is everything goes into bedrock, yes.
And would the hillside be more vulnerable, less vulnerable, or is it irrelevant if the building was 10 feet lower, do you think?
Well, really, it depends upon the height of the cuts.
So it's the how deep you go into the ground.
So how deep you're cutting. And really what's necessary is you have to follow the local ordinances, but most importantly, state guidelines for safe excavations. And so there are standard Cal OSHA engineering practices for safe excavations. Essentially, you are not allowed to, by law, have any vertical cut deeper than 5 feet, regardless whether it's in soil or bedrock, without some type of slope protection, engineered slope protection system. So if during the course of construction they have cuts deeper than 5 feet for their retaining walls, it is incumbent upon the engineers to essentially design a slope protection system, which could include, you know, an actual shoring wall, or it might be laying the slope back at a lesser slope angle, which would probably not likely be the case here because the slope is so steep to begin with and you'd never catch uphill. However, so there's some type of slope protective system depending upon the heights of the cut. Would be standard operating procedure for engineering design.
And I guess my last question for you is that we kind of have dueling experts, you know, or at least one in absentia, but one here. And you have reviewed this, and from your professional judgment, this is a safe project to proceed with the conditions that have been put on.
In my professional opinion, the report that I reviewed was performed in accordance with the guidelines, and I concur with those recommendations as I was seeing the same things that the applicant's geologist was. I did not see any evidence for landsliding on, above, or adjacent to the site. There is a slide about 500 feet to the east, basically at the end of Cerro Gordo, near where the proposed tank site for CSA 10 is proposed in that general area, but published maps show no landslides. Aerial photos, there's no landslide in that area. And in regard to this earth design report, I haven't seen that report. I don't know what area of Cayucas it refers to. It was not submitted to me for this project for review, just the site-specific documents.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Any questions? All right. I hope that the neighbors feel like we took their concerns seriously. I mean, we did continue this, and we've asked for a lot more information. With regard to the four levels, my thought is that it's the same height as the other buildings on the block, and there are fairly significant setbacks. I'm not sure that one could argue that the character of this building is so at variance with what's there now that would make a compelling argument to deny the project. I drive this area quite often. I happen to own some property up on Santa Cruz Creek Road, so I go up Old Creek to get there, and I was just there a couple days ago and looked at Highway 1, both from the north and from the south. Excuse me, I'm recovering from a little cold. And I just can't see how this one additional house in a row of houses along there has a significant impact on the viewscape from the scenic highway. And I try to be very sensitive to that. With regard to fire safety and water safety, we've seen that there's some professional review of that that has taken place and will continue. And as far as the geology, I'm not in a position to second guess the professionals, and I frankly do feel comfortable that the county professional geologist has adequately reviewed this and that the building will be safe, as much as any building is safe. We all are susceptible to tragedies and catastrophes, but I think reasonable diligence has been performed here. I think we took it serious. We looked at these in more detail, but I don't see grounds for denying this individual house. The arguments that I think that have been put forward today would suggest that there be some kind of moratorium on houses in the 30% or greater area of Cayucas, and I don't see any desire or legislation that would suggest that. So I would support a motion to approve this today.
I'll go ahead and make the motion, Chairman, in support of the applicants. I have to get the numbers here. I think it's, where are we? DR. The project title is Kara and Jimmy Brown Variance Coastal Development Permit, DRC 2017-0058. I make a motion to approve this.
I will second that motion.
Okay. Ravonna, is that clear? Staff, is that clear?
So the staff's recommendation to approve variance minor use permit, coastal development permit, DRC 2017-00058, based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B, and there are no changes to the conditions.
Is that correct?
Correct.
Staff. Okay.
Okay.
So everyone's clear on the motion?
Any
questions? Okay. Could you call the roll, please?
Don Ortiz Legg?
Yes.
Commissioner Brown?
Yes.
Commissioner Harrison?
Yes.
Chairman Moultari?
Yes. And of course, this is appealable, so you can take it to another level. Thank you for coming today.
Okay. That brings us to our next item.
We have 13 minutes until our normal break. Should we take that break now or keep moving? What do you think? Just keep going?
Keep going.
All right. Could you introduce the next item, please, Ramona, then?
Hearing item number 9 is a hearing to consider a request by Sprint and Colin Weirich, Trey Atal, for a conditional use permit. County file number DRC 2018-00144. Supervisorial District Number 1, Kip Moray, Project Manager.
Thank you. Staff, you'd like to present the report?
Good morning, Chairman and Commissioners. My name is Kip Morris. I'm the project manager for this project. So the project before you consists of a request by Sprint and Colin Weirich for a conditional use permit to allow for the construction of a 45-foot-tall monopine tree and 6 panel antennas split into 3 sectors with 2 antennas per each sector, along with ancillary support equipment. All of this is to be included within a 465-square-foot lease area on top of a 240-square-foot concrete pad and 2 6-foot-3-inch-tall equipment cabinets, and that is to be surrounded by a new 8-foot-tall wooden fence. The proposed project will result in a disturbance of approximately 646 square feet, including utility trenching. The applicant has also requested a modification to height standards for this area to allow for a 45-foot-tall monopine, where 25 feet is normally the maximum allowed height for structures. This project is located at 624 North Main Street, directly southwest of the North Main and Theater Drive intersection within the community of Templeton in the North County Planning Area in the Salinas River subarea. The project is located within the commercial service zone and is bordered by commercial service, public facilities, and residential rural zoning. The nearest sensitive use is a single-family residence approximately 0.2 miles to the north in the residential rural zone. So this is an aerial view of the proposed site. As you can see, the project is actually located within a parking lot of an existing lumber yard in the northeast corner and is screened behind a row of existing landscaping trees. The applicant has provided this site plan showing the lease area, the existing landscaping, and utility trenching that's proposed, and no changes are proposed to the parking lot configuration as part of this project. This elevation shows the monopine, antenna array, and ground equipment. The top of the monopine will be approximately 45 feet tall, and the maximum height of the ground equipment, as stated before, is 6 feet 3 inches in height, with a GPS antenna that extends to 9 feet in height. The proposed fence height is 8 feet. Staff is recommending that this fence height be conditioned to 6.5 feet to comply with Title 22 fencing and screening standards, and that's in Condition 1C and 2A for reference. The applicant has indicated with discussions with staff that they are amenable to this revision. You can see from this visual simulation provided by the applicant shows the view looking north from Highway 101. You can see here that the equipment enclosure is completely screened behind existing landscaping. The visual impact is also further reduced by the lower elevation of Highway 101. And this elevation shows the monopine looking west from Main Street. And this photo simulation shows the view looking southwest from Theater Drive. So this would be the most visible view of the monopine from the public right-of-way. This photo simulation shows the monopine looking southwest from Highway 101. And this photo simulation shows the tower as seen looking directly west from Highway 101. This slide shows a map of the cellular coverage as existing currently. That's the top left photo, and as proposed with the new facility, as you can see in the bottom right. This is a further blown up map to show you the detailed coverage that would be provided by this site. And I would also like to note that as scheduled, the project was presented at the February 21st TAG regular meeting and was unanimously approved with no modifications to the project. It is staff's recommendation today to approve the conditional use permit based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and subject to conditions listed in Exhibit B.
Okay. Well, thank you, Kip. Is there any questions for staff? Okay, then I'm going to open the public hearing. Is the applicant's representative here? Would you like to say anything? Good morning.
Good morning, Commissioners. John Merritt, representing Sprint. I'm a longtime county resident and probably have my fingerprints on most of the cell sites in the county. We've had the pleasure of working with you before. I know that Kip has worked with my colleague, Tricia Knight, who probably has appeared before you more than I. I was involved, however, in selecting the original site. We looked at many properties in the area to meet Sprint's coverage objective. And we ended up choosing this one because it is in a commercial area. It is set back from residential area. We found a number of existing trees, which would do an effective job of screening the site. As you can see from the photo simulations, it seems to do that. So other than that, we ask for your approval and be glad to answer any questions for you.
Are there any questions? No. Well, thank you very much.
You.
And would you just fill out a form and give it to the secretary?
Certainly.
Just so we have your name. My only comment was that I went out there and took a look at it, and I noticed that the screening trees are deciduous. So,
that is correct.
In the wintertime, it'll stand out a lot more. But nonetheless, so is there, seeing no further comments or questions, is there a motion?
I make a motion that we approve. DRC 20180044 with the conditions listed for the by the Planning Commission or by the Planning.
Second.
Okay. And that's based on the findings in the staff report and mm-hmm. includes the CEQA notice of exemption.
Right.
I assume. Okay. Could you call the roll, please, Ramona?
Who is the second from again, please?
Jane
Brown.
Okay. Commissioner Harrison?
Yes.
Commissioner Brown?
Yes.
Commissioner Dawn Ortiz-Legg?
Yes.
Chairman Moultari?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So this seems like a reasonable time to take a break. Why don't we come back at 10:40, and we'll get on to our last item of business then. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, I'm ready.
Okay, I'm going to call this meeting back to order. And we are on our commission business number 10. Do you want to introduce that item, please, Ramona?
I'll take
The study session is regarding a request by the County of San Luis Obispo Planning Commission for a study session on the 2016 through 2018 biannual summary report of the resource management system.
Great, thank you. Staff. Brian, Dave.
Good morning, Chair Moultari and Planning Commissioners. My name is Brian Pedrotti. I'm the staff planner on this project. And today, as Ramona said, we have a study session for the 2016-2018 biannual summary report of the resource management system. So this presentation will include an overview of the RMS, the RSR, which is the summary report, what levels of severity are, the resources covered by the RSR, recommended actions for each resource, the process of data collection, our public outreach efforts, and finally, a discussion of some of the proposed amendments to the RMS that staff will ask the board to authorize. So the intent of the resource management system is to provide information to guide decisions about balancing land use, balancing land development with the resources necessary to sustain such development. It focuses on collecting data, identifying problems, and helping the decision makers develop solutions. The biennial RSR, the resource summary report, is one of the key parts of the RMS, and it involves the county collecting and compiling information on the resources. So the document itself is based on info gathered from service providers, county agencies, reports from state or federal or state or regional agencies, EIRs, and other research. It involves data from fiscal years July 2016 to June 2018. So it's a two-year cycle, and it recommends levels of severity for each of these resources, and then provides recommendations of actions to address future resource deficiencies. And this one, the newest format this year, it's presented in two volumes. So we have volume one, which is kind of the meat of the report, and then volume two is the appendix, which provides a lot of the background data. So a little bit of recent history. In 2014, the board approved revisions to the RMS, which is part of the framework for planning, and it included the addition of parks and highway interchanges. It also strengthened the water resources criteria and tried to help match the document to the actual process that occurs in the county for resource deficiency alert systems. The Coastal Commission approved a set of sweeping modifications that were sent to the board when they took no, and where the board then took no action on those modifications. The results are that we have two differing sets of criteria for the inland and coastal versions, and therefore there are discrepancies in how certain resources are analyzed, and I'll get to that a little further down the line as well. Actually, I'll talk about it right now. To attempt to address the discrepancy, staff has analyzed water and wastewater under both the inland and the coastal criteria. Hence, for instance, the San Simeon area dropped from a level severity 3 to a 2, not because the state of the water supply or demand had changed, but because simply because the staff had to analyze the coastal areas under a weaker set of criteria. And again, because water has become the dominant portion of the RSR, staff, after direction from the board at the Coastal Commission modifications hearing, were inclined to analyze both criteria to give the most information. Due to the limited difference in the criteria for all the other resources, these were all evaluated using the newest 2014 inland criteria. So levels of severity. For most of the resources in the RSR, level of severity 1 is when the resource use will reach capacity in the time required to expand capacity. Level of severity 2 is the rate of resource depletion. It's when the rate of resource depletion must be decreased to avoid exceeding the resource capacity. And LOS 3 is the most severe. It's that the capacity of the resource has been met or exceeded. And that's true, again, for all of the resources except for water supply, which is pushed out a number of years so that a level of severity 3 actually occurs when it's determined that within 15 years the water supply will be met or exceeded. So because it's such a critical resource, that has been pushed out farther.
But Brian, just pardon me, just to be clear, when you say pushed out farther, in a way it's just we anticipate it sooner.
Correct. Okay. That's a better way to put it, yes. For water supply and systems, the RSR section has been restructured to assign level of severity to an area community versus the basin, or in other words, a water planning area, which is going in the direction of how SGMA, the State Groundwater Management Act, will look at these basins. The RSR also differentiates between Bulletin 118 groundwater basins, which are the basins identified by the DWR, and then other groundwater supplies. So, for instance, Pico Creek up in San Simeon is not a Bulletin 118, but it is a groundwater supply. Fractured Rock, for instance, comes into that arena as well. The WPAs that are in LOS 3 are nearly identical to the last resource summary report. So WPA 1 includes Santa Rosa Valley, the Pico Creek Valley Basins. Number 2 is Los Osos. WPA 3 is Napomo Mesa Management Area. And WPA 5 is Paso Robles. And as I mentioned before, the exception is San Simeon, which dropped from an LOS 3 to 2, but as I stated earlier, this is because the state of the water supply hasn't changed, but we had to analyze it under a different set of criteria. The recommended actions are similar to past resource summary reports. They include actions that the board can take to address the resource deficiencies, water conservation and reuse of plans, reuse plans, impact fees, finding other sustainable water sources, basin management plans, and resource capacity studies. For wastewater, no sewer systems were recommended for level of severity. However, for septic systems, Santa Margarita was at an LOS 1. Nipomo was an LOS 3 for prohibition zone, for areas that are in the prohibition zone. And probably the most notable change is that Los Osos went from an LOS 3 to an LOS nothing for the wastewater treatment plant was constructed during this time. Some of the recommended actions are also similar to the last one. They look at monitoring septic failures, consultation with different agencies, including the Regional Water Quality Control Board, alternatives to septic systems, and identifying funding sources. For roads, several roadway and interchanges were recommended for a level of severity. Most notable is that LOVR and Price Canyon Road improved, but that Los Barros was now an LOS 3, and then the interchange of Highway 101 and State Route 166 fell from an LOS 1 to an LOS 2. Recommended actions for roads and interchanges include monitoring the levels of service, and some of the things that we already do, including circulation studies, road impact fees, and grants. Schools, there's not much change in this section, and this section for schools is mostly informational, as the board has little, if any, control over school capacity issues, but it's there for information in terms of enrollment. And some of the recommended actions is to cooperate with districts to enhance revenues and investigate new legislation on school impact mitigation. For parks, again, similar to the last RSR, the criteria measures parkland per acre within 5 miles of parks. And these are fairly stringent criteria, and so most communities have a recommended level of severity of 2 or 3. And some of the recommended actions in this arena are to acquire and develop parks with Quimby impact fees, collaboration with other agencies, and then preparation of resource capacity studies. Air quality is essentially the same. Similarly, ozone was LOS 3 in the East County, LOS 2 in West County. Air quality is divided up into very large air basin regions. Particulate matter is PM, and that's LOS 3 on the Nipomo Mesa, and then LOS 2 in all other areas. And really, we derive this information from the Air Pollution Control District. They have their own monitoring system, and so the recommended action is really to support their ongoing efforts. As a data collection effort, many agencies and departments were involved with providing the planning department with the information that gets into the RSR. In terms of public outreach, a public review draft was distributed in December of 2018 for review and comment to those agencies, as well as the CSDs and the Community Advisory Council chairs and the Water Resources Advisory Council, which is sort of the main body that takes a look at the water section. The RAC also involves a lot of the CSD chairs and other folks involved with those. A list of participating agencies is also included in the appendix of the RSR, if you'd like to see the entire list. Staff received a significant number of comments, including these agencies and departments, and these are summarized in Attachment 3 with responses to each of those. Now, that's essentially the RSR. As noted earlier in the presentation and in the staff report, there arise several issues with this resource summary report that have prompted staff to ask the board whether they would like to proceed with authorization of some amendments to the RMS, which is the general plan. First, as touched on earlier, there exist discrepancies with the two sets of RMS criteria, resulting in different LOS criteria for different resources. Secondly, the water resources section has grown to become the major focus of the RSR, and while at the same time we've got other planning water planning efforts, such as SGMA and the IRWMP, which is the Integrated Regional Water Management Plan, and those are simultaneously ongoing and potentially mimic and exceed the analysis that can be accomplished in the RSR. Third, we have received comments over the last few RSRs questioning the resources that are analyzed in the RMS. For instance, why do we analyze roads and interchanges, but we don't analyze bicycle and pedestrian paths? They're all transportation related. What about Oak Woodland as another resource? One of the letters in your that came late asked about Monterey Pine in Cambria, for instance. So
I have a question. So I take it that one of the objectives might be to harmonize the coastal and non-coastal scoring. And yet, it seems to me that in many areas, there are two distinct things that would have, just by definition, different LOS. I mean, the coastal would be critical for things, you know, water, environmental issues, maybe parks. So just how can they be handled separately, which I guess is they are now differently, and you're wanting to harmonize them. So do you see what my question is?
Yeah, I think in the past, staff has looked at we've thought about harmonizing them because we've looked at the resources as sort of independent of geography in some ways. Some of the basins actually cross the coastal boundary. In our opinion, it didn't make sense to be looking at a different set of criteria in the coastal region for a basin than in the inland. You know, it's water supply in and out, kind of the same criteria potentially should be used. There probably are some factors in some of the coastal basins that may not be factors in inland basins, like saltwater intrusion or things like that. But, you know, I think overall we were looking to say that the resource is the resource. We should have one set of criteria to look at.
Yeah, that's fine. I was just trying to clarify what your objective was.
Okay. And that question kind of goes to the next question. Overall, is the level of severity system the best way to analyze these resources? Finally, is the growth management ordinance reliance on the LOS designations for water resources the most appropriate method to establish the countywide growth rate? Or is there something else if we marry it with SGMA and the GSPs? It is recommended that the Planning Commission conduct a study session and consider the request by county staff to seek board authorization to amend Chapter 3 of the Resource Management System of the Inland and Coastal Framework for Planning Documents. You also received a few letters late yesterday. There's one from Kristen Heinrichs requesting a study session in Cambria. It just asks about additional public outreach. And the response on that is that the RSR is a data collection portion of the RMS. We would not normally hold a study session outside of the Planning Commission for that document. However, if the board does go ahead and authorize the RMS changes, staff would refer these out to all the CACs. And a presentation study session would definitely be a possibility. We would take it on the road and discuss that with all the CACs. You also had a letter from Mary Webb of Greenspace, and they echo sort of that study session request for specifically for Cambria. They also reference water issues in Cambria and the San Simeon Water Treatment Plant. Again, in this letter, there's some attached letters from the Surf Rider Foundation asking about Monterey Pine as a resource. And a third letter you received was from Mel Doran. He's concerned about the San Simeon level of severity changing from an LOS 3 to a 2. And as we explained earlier, this is due to the use of the 1996 coastal criteria. Finally, a letter from Tina Dickinson, concerned with the noticing of the RSR. And we'll just say that, again, the RSR is a data collection and evaluation effort that's required to be adopted by the board. As the Planning Commission item is a study session, there's no noticing requirements other than being agendized. Similarly, there's no set noticing requirement for the RSR at the Board of Supervisors other than the agendized item. But that being said, staff has provided a noticed newspaper ad for this item for the board. Further, there's been ample availability of the document for review and comment. The data collection involved numerous agencies, the CSDs, and the public review draft was sent out to the CSDs, the RAC, and the chairs of the advisory councils. And staff did contact Coastal Commission staff recently directly about this item. So a lot of that, we're doing a little extra to try and get the word out. But that concludes staff's presentation.
Okay. Well, first of all, I want to thank the staff for bringing this to the Planning Commission. One of our requests has been that when things relevant to our decision-making comes up, that we at least be informed about it. So I really appreciate your taking the time and including us in the process here. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, Commissioner Ortiz-Lang.
Yes. So when you have a study session, and let's say in Cambria, and it's going to be mostly about water and waste water, probably. How is that? What will happen? I mean, will there be just taking public input, or will there be, definitive things that are occurring? I mean, obviously, like the chairman said, for example, we had a, affordable housing piece that was just appealed based on there's not enough water in Cambria. And, I mean, not only is that... obviously it's the right of the citizens to do that, but I also think that it's concerning in the sense that it does cost money and it takes effort from staff and everything else if we are able to demonstrate better that there is water available for items and we're not being frivolous with those things. So I'm just curious as how the study session works. I don't know. It's kind of all wrapped in observation.
And I'll clarify that the intention is not to take this RSR before the March 12th board to get to Cambria for a separate study session on this document. It's if the board was to authorize some amendments to the RMS, which would be a general plan amendment. And so in the normal course of a project that's a general plan amendment, we would go out and let the advisory councils know about it. They would agendize it. And if we did have a study session, it would probably be wrapped up in a, maybe an agenda of the advisory council in Cambria, for instance. And we would work with them to do that because we have liaisons at each of these advisory councils anyway. So we do have staff going to them. And so we'd be happy to make presentations to that effect in any of the, advisory councils that would want us to give those presentations. But again, if we do get into that process, it's a long process. We would go probably out first and then come back with a public draft for them to review and comment. So it would be multiple spots for folks to provide review and comment.
Could we as planning commissioners, when faced with a project, call it, you know, the Cambria Affordable Housing, and somebody says, you know, you shouldn't do that because we don't have enough resource, water, whatever it is. We're in a LOS 3, and so therefore you shouldn't approve using more of that resource. Is that a tool for us? I mean, let's say that, you know, if they want to do something that involves water, but could somebody or planning commission say, oh, it's okay because it's an LOS 2 or 1, and support that project or deny the project based on the LOS? I mean, it's not something that we've really done in my, maybe we have, but I have not heard of this being used as a criteria to support or deny projects. And so, I just don't know what it is.
Yeah, so in the past, I'll say that the LOS criteria, the levels of severity that get designated by the board, except for some very limited occasions, don't require, for instance, the commission or the board of supervisors to take an action such as a moratorium or different subdivision standards or anything like that. It's an informational document and it's alert system, and so it includes recommended actions that the board can take, but those are essentially at the discretion of the board to take those. So it could lead to the board identifying a program or a plan that would address those resource deficiencies. There are a few areas in our local coastal plan where there are these sort of automatic triggers. If it's deemed to be level of severity 2 or 3, then there's policies in there that say you need to, it changes how you look at subdivisions and things like that. But for the most part, it is it's really an informational alert system for the board to then use to take action. Mm-hmm. To your question about the Planning Commission, the Planning Commission has to make findings for projects. And so if the commission deemed that the level of severity in a certain area was one of those findings for denial or approval or whatever, I'm assuming you would have discretion to use those. This is a public document, so mm-hmm. You could use those as findings, just not as automatic triggers like an ordinance, for instance.
And so when the severity levels are analyzed, then the offset programs, such as in Cambria, is that somehow... I mean, so they have an offset program in Cambria for any development that happens there. And that's where I think that it gets confusing to the citizens in that, you know, well, we're in level severity, but so that means that we can't do anything, but yet there's an offset program how is that tied in to help educate the public is basically what I'm asking.
Right. So because the level of severity is it's a piece of information out there, the board may do plans and things that address that, but may not go as far maybe as some people would hope. So in the Pomo, for instance, there's a level of severity 3 with the basin, and the board has adopted ordinances in conjunction with an adjudication of the basin that put limits on development and subdivision in the basin. So it all just depends on the action that the board takes, and that could take different forms for different basins. It's on a case-by-case basis.
I guess the only thing that I was bringing up about this is that, you know, when you have a study session and people come to that, then they're, you know, they get this piece, but they might not get the other piece of what's happening actually policy-wise.
Right.
And so kind of...
I guess, in the best of worlds, it'd be great to have both come together in a sense. This is what we've been doing. This is what we've been able to save. And, you know, and what other ideas do we have as far as storage and all of those things? So that's, again, I think that one of the things that we see is trying to educate the public about all of the work that goes in to staff and all of the projects that come forth, such as the geological studies and all those things. And I think that a lot of times the public is not aware or doesn't understand that these decisions are not being made quite so haphazardly.
Right.
So that's my comment.
Well, getting back to the Planning Commission, what practical value is this? I mean, it never occurred to me to look up an LOS level on some resources that might be in contention for that particular project. And so to support, say, the approval of that process, I could say, that's LOS 1. We just take it off the table. We're not going to be concerned. I mean, that's the way I'm reading this, it could be used materially in the decision of a project, and that's big to me. That's a huge tool. Well, and I don't know. Am I on the right track?
Well, I think you are, and I'm under the impression that when it's relevant in the staff reports, you tell us whether it's LOS 2 or 3, and then you talk about what mitigations the board may have adopted in those situations. The ones that come to my mind is the discussions in Napomo particularly, right, where there's offsets. And we've encountered them in Cambria, too. And I believe the staff tells us, this is a severe resource constraint in this area, yeah. And this is why we can get past it or we can't get past it.
That's correct. It right. kind of comes out in some of in the CEQA document. So when you have initial studies and you're looking at the water resource section and identifying the setting and then the impact, some of the level of severity 3 for the Paso Basin, I believe, and for Napomo Basin come out in those documents and are looked at as part of the impact and mitigation discussions.
Good point.
Commissioner Harrison?
In your opinion, how long is it going to be until the LOS 3 in Napomo Mesa is removed, and what are they going to have to do to get that?
Yeah. That's a good question, Commissioner Harrison.
Let's see. I have just a couple of...
I just had a point, Karen. Traffic is a good one to discuss, and usually our CEQA documents talk about traffic and the different LOS, and that's why we have traffic studies for a project. We also have the traffic fee, mitigation fee areas. So you'll see
that. I'm familiar with traffic. That's one LOS that I know about.
And it's an easy one to get your head around. Yeah.
Yeah, but the other ones, like water, has never been presented in an LOS sense.
Let me clarify, too. That,
there's a difference between the two.
This is level of severity. The traffic is level of service, which is it's different, yes.
And in the water, if you're at level 3, it means that in 15 years you're going to run out of water if you don't do something about it. So you need to do something about it. But Napomo Mesa has done something about it. Perhaps it's not enough, but they've done something about it. And if you want to do anything on Napomo Mesa, you have to get a intent to serve letter from either the NCSD or Golden State or Woodlands or Cypress Ridge. Or you have to be in an area that can demonstrate that they have adequate water supply. I think. Is that correct?
I think so.
Yes, that's correct for individual projects. You need to provide evidence of water supply to the planning department prior to...
Right, and then when it comes here, you explain where those levels of service or how they obtain the water. You've done that before.
Yeah.
So I think we're getting that information. Maybe we haven't done a project in those areas that required it really lately.
Thank you. Oh, you're welcome. A couple of thoughts. First of all, I just wanted to be clear. It seems ironic that the board adopted stricter criteria in 2014, but that the Coastal Commission didn't accept them or accepted a different constellation of requirements, and the board didn't go along with the Coastal Commission, so legally they have to revert to the pre-2014 standards, and that's why San Simeon is a 2 when it otherwise would be a 3. Is that, I just want to...
That's, okay. That's correct.
And I had another question about when you're thinking about level of severity for parks, I noticed that Avila Beach is one and Cayucas, and yet they have... How could you have a park deficiency in Avila Beach when you have a giant beach with swings and playgrounds and all that stuff? So obviously then regional state parks are not part of the analysis. Is that...
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Dave Moran with DLM. We calculated the population within a five-mile radius mm-hmm. of the parks and determined the ratio of park acreage to population within those areas.
Right.
And unfortunately, there's a deficiency in pretty much all of the community parks in the county when you do that exercise.
Mm-hmm.
So...
From a community park standpoint...
Yes.
Yeah. I'm just saying that the analysis doesn't take into account greater than local parks that could be used by those local communities. When you, it's maybe that's a rhetorical question. Don't take it off, but it just strikes me as odd that you would think that you know Avila or Cayucas, for example, don't have sufficient parks when they have these long beaches with all kinds of. They're just not county parks.
It is something to examine. Yeah, maybe for another round.
Right.
We work closely with Parks and Rec to come up with, you know, the parkland that is, and I'm not recalling offhand how we determined the under control
right.
of and what was involved in that 5 mile radius.
Yeah, because it would seem that in those instances, rather than saying that they have severe shortages, maybe the severity in other areas, that don't have. Regional parks or state parks with complementary recreational facilities should have a higher priority. So by blending them together, I think it kind of overstates their severity and understates the severity where it's not. And if I don't know if the board's going to be interested in this, but just a thought. Is that these days we think of transportation in terms of you know complete streets and multimodal analyses. And I would agree with the comments that said maybe we should be thinking about bike lanes, but also transit, public transit, as well as just capacity for cars in the future, if that's interesting. And then I think another resource that I'm not sure exactly how to express this, but it's a thought is wildfire exposure. And it seems like more and more, particularly with climate change, the ability of communities to respond to wildfire might be an appropriate resource constraint that we should be thinking about along the more traditional ones. It's just an idea.
Yeah, and we can... We can look at those and see how they dovetail with our. We're also looking at the safety element as
mm-hmm.
well, which will look at some of those, the hazard kind of portions of those resources.
I have a question.
Yes, of course.
As long as we have you guys here, I'll try not to be. So would not the transportation intermodal pieces be available through SLOCOG kind of things? Would you do coordinate, I guess I should ask, with their data? On items like that?
We obtain the data directly from our Public Works Department.
Mm-hmm.
I believe there's coordination between Public Works and SLOCOG on some of that information, but
mm-hmm.
Mr. Grimm is here as well to discuss, but we get our data directly from Public Works on the level. It's basically the level of severity in the RSR is based on the level of service
mm-hmm.
That is
got that.
on our roadways. And so.
That's right. When we provide information to planning, it's we're collecting a lot of information from the folks in the transportation community, SLOCOG, other cities, and parties like that. And then
okay.
channeling that information.
Yeah. Last comment is that the water, you know, I look at that list of the things that are being done and not really knowing the feasibility of it, but I never see storage on there. And I think, like, after a summer like this, or excuse me, a winter, what are we in? This season, that's been the season, I just wonder when we're going to get to that point where we have some plans to implement storage, small, large, anything, where that comes from, where that bubbles up from, besides running down my driveway. Thank you.
Any other comments? This is not a public hearing, but Mr. Edwards, we'll gladly take your comment. If you keep it to 3 minutes, that'd be nice.
Thank you, Chairman Moltari and commissioners. Again, my name is Jeff Edwards. In the coastal zone, the RMS is critically important, and I would submit to you that it has regulatory implications without question. I wanted to, as a 40-year resident of Los Osos, I wanted to talk a little bit about water. You've heard from staff that the wastewater project is online, and we've overcome that hurdle. We're at 45% capacity, so there's plenty of room to grow. But I really wanted to chat about water specifically this morning. And as your commission may know, water is separated into two categories, one supply and one is system. And at present, based on the trends that we've seen in Los Osos with regard to water demand, we've seen an incredible reduction in demand over the last 20 years, mostly in the urban area. And I'll go into some numbers in a second. But right now, the level of severity for water supply in Los Osos is 3. I think that's misplaced. There is no level of severity for system. And I think that's incorrect as well. My belief is that we have management, basin management issues, not supply issues. For example, presently, right now, we have a demand in the community of approximately 2,170 acre feet. That includes 1,000 acre feet for urban uses, 800 acre feet for agriculture, and about 370 acre feet per year for miscellaneous cemetery, golf course, et cetera. The safe yield of our basin, our annual safe yield, is about 2,450 acre feet per year. So we're substantially less, our demand is substantially less than the supply. That is our yield. I think that's the current level of severity 3 for water supply, I believe, is misplaced. I would submit to you that the level of severity 1 should be for supply. Now, on the other hand, I think our system is has some challenges. And through our basin management plan and our basin management committee, we're working to overcome some of those limitations. And while there is no level of severity now for water supply, or sorry, water system in Los Osos, I think it maybe should be around a level of severity 2. And Mr. Chairman, if you'd allow, I have about another minute or so, if you'd allow me to go over. There's been a lot of confusion in Los Osos, and there's even been an op-ed piece in the New Times recently that talks about Los Osos and our groundwater basin as if it's one bathtub. And our basin is not one bathtub. It has vertical strata that are delineated by large aquitards or clay lenses. We have horizontally, we have strand B of the Los Osos Fault, which is in the middle of town, runs north-south. Then we also have Los Osos Creek on the eastern part of the community. That has created a creek compartment. So it's a very dynamic basin with certainly not one bathtub. The most recent op-ed piece suggested as one bathtub, it was almost impossible to better manage the basin through siting your extraction locations appropriately. And generally speaking, what that means in Los Osos is moving extraction locations to the east part of the basin. Again, this is a very complicated matter, and it's important not only because of the regulatory implications, But we have the Coastal Commission looking over our shoulder all the time. We have this ongoing process with our Basin Management Committee. And so I think it's very important to get the numbers right in this RMS, and so it is a viable system. And just to conclude, I would say that we are, again, less than our safe yield, and that trend is going to continue. Frankly, 20 years ago, the combined use of water was in excess of 3,000 acre-feet in Los Osos, and I think we're rapidly approaching a point where we're going to be under 2,000 acre-feet for all uses. So this is a trend that's going to continue, mm-hmm. and we're going to be reducing our demands, and so our basin yield metric, or the percentage of our safe yield that we're using, is going to come down. And we actually have a target of 80% or 80 as a basin yield metric. So I think, again, this is important. I think the supply and the system for water in Los Osos needs to be shifted. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. Thanks for the comment. I see that staff is taking notes. I'm sure they'll have a response to that. You may want to put that in writing, perhaps, and submit it at another time, if you haven't already, Jeff. Oops.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for not submitting a memorandum in advance. This kind of crept up on me, but I will indeed reduce this to writing and submit it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, any other comments? You guys don't, staff there doesn't have anything to say. With that, I think we have concluded this. Again, thank you for bringing this before us. It's very informative and helpful. Do I have a motion to accept all correspondence and testimony into the record?
Yes.
Second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And now a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Very good. Thank you. See you in 2 weeks.